And we're out here. We're out here once more in the wild. Hello. And welcome, or welcome back, to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. Installment 19, frolicking with the trucks again, and the wind,
and the traffic, and the trees.
I'm Anum 5. Thank you very much for downloading and listening. Episode 19 is going to cover infinity times infinity. Multiplication. I wonder, what's the decibel level of an infinite number of trucks driving by an infinite number of locations like this one? If you're new to the podcast and you haven't checked out the International Detective Dragons from Outer Space webpage, you can find it through www.anum5.com. Click on the link, that'll get you to the page. If you're curious at all about what this location is, there's a picture of it. I don't know, somewhere about halfway down the page, it's got a little label on it. It says, insert nutcase with a digital recorder here, or something to that effect. Hey, it's the top of the podcast, so it's time to get to letters and shout-outs and acknowledgments. An acknowledgement, a shout-out, and a thank you, of course, go to Dragon's Landing, Chuck and Lonnie. I tried to do a mini-drama for their Chupacabra Bob abduction, and I failed. It's anything but a mini-drama. It's 20 minutes long, for crying out loud. And I apologized to them, actually, in an email and said, sorry about this, it is 20 minutes long. If you guys could maybe link to it in your show notes. But they did better than that. They played the first 5 minutes of it right there on their show, or something to that effect, maybe even longer than 5 minutes. I didn't time it, but they played a good portion of the beginning of it on their show and indicated that they're going to put it into their podcast feed, make it available by itself through them, which is most excellent, and I do indeed thank them very much. Nobody to welcome to the Frapper Map, though. Last I checked, and that was just a little while ago, there's still only 8 members, 8 exclusive and elite people that have the wisdom and the good taste to place their pin on the map of the unusual. And I've got 2 listener feedbacks, 2 emails, both from Derek in Texas. Always good to hear from Derek. And I'll just get right to reading those now. First one, subject line is reading ideas. Hi, Anum. It's Derek in Texas again. I've been reading some books that coincide with some of the topics you've been discussing, and I'd like to mention them to you. First is One by Richard Bach. This is the same guy that wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull, a great book in its own right. One, however, approaches the concept of infinity on a very deep personal level. What if every life was your life? What if your life was every life? Next, I'd like to mention Ishmael by Daniel Quinn. This book essentially takes everything that humanity and humans have done since our cognitive dawn and starts pointing fingers. Imagine what it would be like if man had never decided to plant crops. What if man had never decided they ever needed to make more food than was absolutely necessary? How is man part of the earth? How is man part of the life on earth? I recommend these 2 books to you and to all your listeners, just as some roughage for the brain. Both are easy reads. Both are thought-provoking. As I write this, I have not listened to the newest installment, but I look forward to it. It's very much something I look forward to often. Keep up the good casting, Derek. Thank you. Thank you very much. Those do sound like some very interesting reads. I checked out the both of them on Amazon just to see the reader reviews, and they both look like very fascinating works. I'm going to have to get a hold of those. The second email, quite obviously because of the subject line, indicates that he'd listened to episode 18, because that's the subject line, episode 18, communication. And he writes as follows. You asked about forms of communication that span cultures and peoples, so here are my thoughts for what they're worth. I would have to say that music is a possible way, but there is so much surrounding music from the context of the rest of the culture. Music alone can't really bridge much, I think. Take an American culture. Someone who lived in a white suburban neighborhood and never saw real personal tragedy has a hard time understanding truly what it is like to live where personal tragedy was commonplace, as portrayed in early hip-hop. Further still, not many people understand, except those who really listen to a lot of it, that Irish folk music is for storytelling, be it with or without words. Few Americans understand that Baroque music was intended to interpret certain emotions into organized sound. Few Mongolians are going to understand why country music can raise so much sentiment in its admirers. People my age, 20s, have little patience and comprehension for the rustic folk tunes from early North America, whether you consider that colonial or Native American America. I would say that the aesthetics of music allow people to connect at some level, but understanding may be far off, just my opinion. Dramatic interpretation and art forms, such as painting and sculpture, do a better job, as they can show in more concrete forms the ideas of a person or people. I will not include in my list the typical answer of smiles or laughter, because anyone with a lick of sense and access to BBC can tell you that even Americans and the British have divergent senses of humor. And in some countries, I've been informed by people far more traveled than I, a passing glance and smile, while perfectly acceptable and sometimes expected in our country, would be seen as suspicious or insulting in other cultures. Though I myself am not a scientist nor a mathematician, I would have to fully agree with you about math and science. I've even heard it argued that it is the preferred method of communication between cultures because there is no chance for a breakdown. I think that's all I can think of on this topic. Everyone who is listening to this, please send Annam some audios or emails or something just to let him know he's not just meandering into a microphone. Annam, again, it's a pleasure, and keep it up. Derek. P.S. Feel free to include this with the other email should you decide it wise. Oh, let me just repeat let me repeat one small portion of that email, if I may. Everyone who is listening to this, please send Annam some audios or emails or something, just to let him know he's not just meandering into a microphone. Everyone listening? What he said. There, you see, I'm not just saying it myself. Listen to Derek. He's a wise man. He knows what he's talking about. Honestly, really, an audio, simplest thing in the world. An email, dash off a note. It doesn't hurt. I'll read it. Oh, and thank you for the use of the word meandering instead of the other one. Very good points, actually. Regarding a non-linguistic... Now, what have I got? Birds competing with me? Is man a part of the earth? Is man a part of the life on earth? Well, I am. Maybe. Bird certainly knows I'm here. Non-verbal, non-written, non-linguistic communication. Yeah, music will get across... We'll get across an emotional state, probably, and in some cases can't really be appreciated depending on your culture. I mean, there's certain classic pieces of Chinese music that I would probably have to listen to 50 or 60 times before I actually recognized it as music. Of course, I may get some hate mail over this, and you can go ahead and write it in. I consider myself extremely eclectic in terms of musical taste, extremely eclectic. I can appreciate almost everything. I'm sorry. This may be an outgrowth of my adolescence, but I cannot stand country western music. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I can't stand it. I used to have to listen to it every morning before going to school when I was in high school, because that's what was played in the kitchen day after day, and I listened to it, and I thought to myself, I hate this. I apologize, that's just where I come from. Everything else I can probably deal with, even opera, and I don't understand opera, but I can certainly listen to it and appreciate it. But as a nonverbal form of communication, non-written, non-linguistic,
I'm going to agree with Derek on that. It's very contextual, very cultural, culture-specific, and it doesn't get across, I don't think it gets across information, really. I think it more gets across mood and emotion. I will further agree on the physical arts, sculpture, painting. There you're actually looking at something. Then again, you can argue that you have to find a certain point, a certain gray area where you draw the line between what is actually representing information. Say it's a classical painting of a landscape, something from the Romantic era with a great big giant cliff and clouds and epic-sized trees, a path running through it, something very obvious to whoever looks at it, no matter what culture they're in. And then you get something like a painting that's completely white, except for a tiny quarter-sized circle in the middle of it that's off-white. What information is that getting across? If I keep going in this direction, we're going to get into a what is art discussion, and that's not what this podcast is going to be about. Not what is art. This installment is going to deal with infinity squared. No, not infinity squared. Let's see, infinity squared would be infinity times itself. Infinity cubed would be infinity times infinity times infinity. Don't know quite how to put it. I was never very good at math, particularly not math that can either be proven correct or incorrect. Another quick correction for shout-outs is an apology I have. I must apologize. While I was certainly very happy to welcome back the Mad 3, Gamer the Podcasting, Caroline, Jeff, and Sasha, and congratulate them on their episode 21. I was very glad to hear it. What did I remember from it? I remembered the Vacuform segment. That's what I remembered from it. Who was presenting the information in the Vacuform segment? Why, it was Emily. Did I say her name? No. Shame on me. So sorry about that, Emily. Glad the Mad 3 is back, and glad you were there to join them. And thank you for the information about Vacuform. If you're interested in knowing about Vacuform and forming pieces of armor from it and other objects, I'm not going to tell you, because you can find it out by listening to Gamer the Podcasting episode 21 and checking out their show notes. Schnotes. I also have an apology here for History Dave and Ray Lamond. History Dave of Dragon's Landing podcast. They have him on as a guest every once in a while. Always fun to hear from him. Adds to the show. And Ray Lamond from Misfit Brew. Why am I apologizing? Well, I got together a whole bunch of names of podcasts, and I'm leaving, even at this, I'm leaving a ton of people out. In that 20-minute Dragnet parody of the Chupacabra incident in Los Angeles, I got together a ton of names of listeners and podcasts and just tried to include as many people as I was familiar with from listening to all the different podcasts I enjoy listening to. And after I had gone to print, as it were, made it available, sent the link over to Chuck and Lonnie, I'd listened to it a few more times and realized that I had left out the names Ray Lamond and History Dave. How could I do that? Sorry, guys. I know, it's over and done with now. That doesn't cut the mustard. Dragon's Landing Secret Service got lots of exposure in that. They were repeated many times. And out here in the real world, they don't actually exist. But Ray Lamond and History Dave do. So, sorry. Okay, gonna put that behind me now and just move on. Brain roughage. High fiber for the brain. I'm going to recommend and put in the schnotes a link to a podcast that I discovered through listening to another podcast. I bet that happens a lot to you, too. I listened to Mysterious Universe, and through them, through their schnotes, I found a podcast called Brain Food. Now, while I talk about lots of ethereal, philosophical, metaphysical, psychological, all that BS that I know nothing about, but ramble on for an hour, sometimes more, about, and can prove nothing, drawing on my own ignorance and a faulty memory, Brain Food is quite different. Brain Food is a science podcast that offers well-researched and well-considered fact. Somebody that knows what he's talking about and can prove it. And the notes that go along with his show are phenomenally good. Last I checked, he was up to episode 9, and I hope he continues with quite a few more. And I will put a link to Brain Food, the podcast, in my notes. And another link that kind of correlates and ties in directly with this particular episode, and that is a link to something I found, again, through Mysterious Universe. Whether you're able to make it to the IDDFOS site or not, check out, even through a Google search, Imagining the Tenth Dimension. I believe that's the correct term. The link I'm going to put up will take you to a page that pretty much lets you know the site requires the Flash Player 8 plugin. Hopefully you've got that installed already. If not, it's not a big deal to go ahead and get it installed. It's just a plugin that plays the media that goes along with the site, and it's well worth it. It is absolutely well worth it. There's a Flash animation in there that goes into the examination of dimensions from 0 to 10, to the 10th dimension, and it visually does one of the best jobs I've ever seen of really making clear some very difficult concepts beyond the single point, the line, height, width, and depth in time, and the branching theory of parallel universes, which I think I've touched on occasionally from time to time. In one particular podcast, I don't remember which one it was, I began talking about that too, and as far as what my ultimate library of heaven would be like, covering everything that happened not only in this universe that we're in now, but in parallel universes where things didn't quite pan out the way they did in this one, because of the smallest little details, the choices that individuals have made, and the accidental placement of a patch of slippery ice, a skateboard on the sidewalk, maybe just one person somewhere waking up with a headache where in another universe they didn't. So multiple realities. Something that probably ties into that book that Derek recommended, One, by Richard Bach, that probably plays pretty heavily in that. Judging from the reviews I read, it does. Although in that particular book, it seems that it's more geared towards personal choices than the chaos of accident. But I'm not going to get into theory right away. I'm going to get into practicum. We're going to go into a practical reality, a demonstration which is illustrated very well, actually, in the animation. So I wouldn't fret too much if you can't really do it right now. But I'm going to recommend doing it anyway, just for a kind of a whack upside the head as far as dimensions and realities go. And we'll do that just after this short break. Back in a bit. Other dimensions. Other realities. Alternate universes. It's amazing how I can think these things. I can have long, eloquent conversations with myself inside my head, and then as soon as I hit record, it all evaporates. Here's an experiment that you may have already done many times. It involves the Mobius strip. Those of you that know full well what a Mobius strip is and have made them yourself and experimented with them, please bear with me. I'm going to be doing it again. Those of you who have not, good. I'm getting a new idea across. And even for those of you that have, it's still fun as a refresher. What does a Mobius strip demonstrate? Mathematically, I couldn't begin to tell you what it demonstrates. I've seen the formula and the graphs and the theory, and I don't understand a bit of it. Fortunately, I don't have to, and neither do you. All you have to do is make one and play with it. So those of you that have, bear with me. Those of you that haven't, if you can, give this a try. The Mobius strip was discovered, or at least documented. I'm sure it was discovered long before this fellow. In the 1800s, there's an exact date in the Wikipedia article I just read and promptly forgot.
by August Ferdinand Möbius. There's an umlaut over the O. And this is how you make one. Take a strip of paper. You can actually do it with a piece of typing paper. And a pair of scissors. Piece of typing paper is 8.5 by 11. Cut along the edge. Just cut a straight strip of paper from the edge of the 11-inch side, the long side. Make it about an inch, inch and a half wide. Doesn't have to be exact. So that you got a strip of paper. Try and keep it consistent, roughly consistent, about an inch wide, inch and a half wide. So cut that out. There, you've got a strip of paper. Pick it up and form what you would look at as a ring or a loop of the paper, like you were going to make a chain out of it or something. Or a chain out of a bunch of them. Form a ring with the ends close together, as if you're going to tape the ends closed and make it a ring. But instead of taping the ends closed, do one thing first. Take one of those edges and twist it once, and then tape that edge to the opposite edge. 180 degree turn, and then tape it to the opposite edge. So you haven't formed precisely a ring, you formed a ring of paper that's got one twist in it, one rotation in it. And what you've created is a spatial paradox. You've created a shape in three dimensions that takes a two-dimensional plane that gives it only one side and one edge. I know, you're shocked and amazed. You probably had to pull over to the side of the road if you're listening to this in a car and just, you know, dab your forehead with a handkerchief because you were just so overwhelmed by that. Or you had to go and make yourself a cup of tea if you're sitting at home. Whatever. I understand. Not shattering. But this is the interesting part, particularly if you haven't played with these at all. Here's a further experiment to do. You've taped the edges closed. You've got this Möbius strip. Set it down on a table, desk, or flat surface and grab a pen and draw a line on the Möbius strip, essentially treating that strip of paper as if it were a road and you were dividing the road in half with a highway divider line. Doesn't have to be dotted. As a matter of fact, it's better if it's solid. You don't ever have to let the pen leave the surface of the paper. Just keep drawing a line down the middle of it. Move, rotate, manipulate the loop of paper that you have along as you go, and just keep going. Try to remain in the middle as much as possible, and you will find, those of you that haven't done this, you will find that very shortly you will come upon the beginning of your line. You will have looped around to where you started. What did that prove? That proved that the two-dimensional plane you took, which appears to have two sides to it, the closer you look, that is, if you grab a little half-inch section of it and you put your finger or a pen on one side, you obviously can go to the opposite side of it. There's one side and there's the other. If you look on it on that scale, on a close scale, very close examination, you see that obviously the piece of paper that you're holding, loop-shaped or not, appears to have two sides. And yet, when you take the scale back, when you look at it as a whole, and treat it as a whole in three-dimensional space, you discover that it has only one side. It's a physical, real-world example of a dimensional concept, in this case, two dimensions, the flat plane, width and depth, is a dimension of existence that can, in fact, be curved in on itself. You want to get another little kick, especially those of you that haven't done this yet, grab a pair of scissors and cut along that line you just drew. Just snip right down the middle of the strip, the loop, the Möbius strip, along that line that you drew on it. And just like with the pen, you'll discover that you meet the part where you began cutting. And when you make that final snip, think about what you've got. You've got a loop of paper. You've got a loop of paper that you can pass a baseball through, put over your wrist, see through to the other side. It's roughly circular. It just has a twist in it, that's all. One little twist that alters its reality. But go ahead and make that final snip. But before you do, consider what you think is going to happen. Large-scale, pragmatic, first-glance logic seems to be defied after you've made that final snip. You want to try another little interesting experiment with that kind of strip. Instead of giving it one turn, give it two turns. Make another one and give it two turns. Instead of 180 degrees, make it 360 degrees and then tape the ends together. Draw a line there, you'll find that they meet again. But then go ahead and cut that along the line and consider what you think should happen. And then observe what does. Best real-world example I can think of playing with your own head.
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space Agency, how can I help you?
So what is it about the Mobius Strip that relates to this program? Well, it's a physical and visual representation of a closed system, of a finite model of a plane of existence. In that case, a two-dimensional plane existing in three-dimensional space. If you were to go ahead and put trees and buildings and oceans and birds and stuff on that one flat surface, and you're only able to perceive just a little ways ahead of you and behind you on that surface and traveled along, you would be living in a curved universe. And in a curved universe, the furthest distance you can travel is to the back of your own head, traveling forward, that is. Multidimensional and alternate reality theory takes the two dimensions of the Mobius strip, just as one example, and applies it to the reality we're living in now, the one in which I can't seem to pronounce the word the reality we're living in now, with the added dimension of height. On the plane, on the flat plane of the Mobius strip, we've got width and depth. Here in our reality, we have height as well, and some contend the fourth dimension being time. So we're three dimensions within a context of a linear dimension of time, perceived by most as a continuous line with the possibilities of branching off. The branching off idea is certainly the easiest to conceive of because you can imagine alternate possibilities depending on certain things that happen or don't happen. That's pretty simple. Grabbing onto the idea that that reality may actually exist, but just cannot be perceived, shunts it over into the realm of fantasy, at least according to modern scientific method. What I found most interesting, though, or one of the things that really opened up my mind to some of the possibilities, when I watched this Imagining the Tenth Dimension animation, which, as I said, I'm going to put a link to on the IDDFOS webpage, what really sparked further thought on my part was the idea that, yes, in this particular universe we're living in, there is, of course, the possibility, or we can at least imagine the possibility, of the genuine existence of branching realities based on choices and accident. There could also be not just one Big Bang, but an infinite number of Big Bangs, and an infinite number, therefore, of alternate realities with completely different, unreachable, inaccessible beginnings. And some of those beginnings having not only alternate results and alternate branching timelines, but alternate physics. The impression I get when I listen to the narrative behind the animation is our Big Bang produced a specific and consistent observable natural laws, observable by us because we're within the system, and mathematically provable, again, because we're within the system and because they're consistent, natural physical laws, the physics of this universe. But if there were other Big Bangs, an infinite number of them, and this is a key concept there, if there are an infinite number of Big Bangs that resulted in an infinite variation of laws, then the implications of that are extremely staggering, and they reach back to something that I actually wondered about back when I was in grade school, when I first heard about the infinite number of monkeys banging away on the infinite number of typewriters. Taking that infinite number of monkeys illustration, along with the infinite number of typewriters,
specifically tells us that everything that ever has been written and everything that ever can be written using the letters on that typewriter will be produced somewhere within that quantity of monkeys. That, of course, limits it to written text. You could also apply it to an infinite number of monkeys with an infinite number of lumps of clay in front of them, each having an infinite number of implements to poke it with. Among them would produce the Pietà, or David, or perfect clay representations of a PC, whatever. The basic postulate is that an infinite variety of creative possibilities will produce every conceivable creative result. Not only every conceivable creative result, but an infinite number of that result and an infinite number of variations on that result. Infinity is a big number. But taking that as a possibility, taking that concept and applying it to the universe when I was in seventh or eighth grade, I thought to myself, if the universe is infinite, if it just goes on forever, that means that creation and this universe has an infinite number of creative possibilities, in which case there must be somewhere in this universe another Earth or an infinite number of other Earths. I apologize, that was the air conditioner. An infinite number of other Earths with an infinite number of me's and you's and everyone else's. Only on some of those Earths, or an infinite number of those Earths, Santa Claus actually does exist. And where that falls down, of course, and where I had a hard time with it, was the physics of this universe doesn't allow for that, even if it is infinite. However, with an infinite number of Big Bangs that can result in variable physics, then there may in fact be universes, an infinite number, wherein the physics actually allows for Santa Claus to actually exist. So what is it that specifically binds us as conscious beings to this particular reality, this particular universe? Most would say our brains. Our perceptions are limited to the five senses we possess and the brain that processes them. The brain acts as a tuning mechanism to this reality and grounds us in the physics of this particular existence. It doesn't perceive alternate timelines or alternate realities of this existence, alternate variations, because the tools to perceive them just aren't present most of the time. There are some that would argue that. There are some phenomena that occasionally occur that indicate, in rare instances, these alternate realities can be perceived. It would take a step in the direction of coming up with some kind of an explanation for the unexplained, and the single biggest problem with coming to any kind of a conclusion so far as the whole paranormal aspect, the whole paranormal topic, is that it's very sadly and woefully unpredictable and unrepeatable. But those are the physics of this particular existence. Those are the physics of this reality. Another way of looking at it, or another way to conceptualize it, is if you were to take, say, a small cardboard box, little cardboard box, about a foot square, and fill it from top to bottom with every known kind of dice you can think of. 8-sided, 20-sided, 6-sided. Just fill it up with all those dice and place it in the middle of a gymnasium. And grab a baseball bat. A thin-walled cardboard box, by the way. You could even make it a paper container of some kind that could hold all those dice. Call that the singularity that existed before the Big Bang and the beginning of our universe. Stand to one side of that thing, haul back on that bat, and give it a great big whack. Smack it as hard as you can. There you've got an explosion that sends all those die in an incredible number of directions, scattering them in an unpredictable way across the entire gymnasium, or at least one side of it, whatever, wherever they end up. And there you have a Big Bang and a universe, a mathematical universe. And if you had the time and inclination, I don't know who would, but This is just a conceptual exercise. Let's check out the distribution pattern of which dice landed where and what their numbers were. Every one of them. It's been, or at least we've been taught, I was taught, matter and energy can either be created nor destroyed. It just transforms, changes shape. Well, if you're going to hold to that, then all the matter in the universe could be considered the finite number of dice that were in that box. But the way they behave and their distribution was determined by the random outcome of that bat swing in the original first strike, the original big bang of the bat hitting the paper container or the cardboard and scattering them around. So you go and you look at each individual die and you see which number they are and you just sketch out that pattern. That's your mathematical big bang universe for that occurrence. And that determined where everything ended up, what its distribution was, what it was made of, and what physics was to be applied to that particular universe that you just created with that bat swing. And if you drive down the road with another paper container filled with same number of die, same types, stand on the other side of it, maybe catch it a little further down on the bat, a little further towards the edge, less energy, more energy, whatever, swing it again and make another big bang in another gymnasium, you're not even going to get close to the same distribution pattern and mathematical results of where everything landed. You're going to come up with an entirely different universe, which may have an entirely different physics in operation. Or you could load it up with only D20s, or you could load it up with only 8-sided die, or only 6, whatever. The variations just in that are astronomically large. So with an infinite number of possible Big Bangs, and an infinite variety of possible outcoming physical laws, the implications are that everything you can possibly imagine actually exists somewhere in infinite number and in infinite variations. The implication is essentially that there are universes, actual, genuine realities, completely unseeable, unprovable, and inaccessible by us at present, that actually exist. So when you pop in Star Trek The Next Generation and you watch that episode where Worf comes back from his Batlev competition and he passes through some kind of bizarre segment of some kind of rift in space. When you watch that episode, consider that in a tenth dimension, imagining a tenth dimensional possibility of existences, that you're not watching fiction, that you're actually observing what in this reality is science fiction bordering on fantasy, or you're watching a documentary of something that actually is happening, has happened, and will happen an infinite number of times. The scale is almost beyond imagining. No, the scale is beyond imagining. It's completely beyond imagining. Because once you get past the possibility of infinite variations of the reality we're living in now under the physics of this universe, and you start accepting the possibility of completely alternate universes that began with different Big Bangs and different results and different branching timelines, then you realize there is absolutely nothing you can imagine that does not actually exist somewhere in a genuine reality. So if someone says, do you believe in Santa Claus? You can say, well, yeah, just not here. I think I hurt the feelings and disrupted the spiritual well-being of my cousins a good long time ago when I was probably about 10 or 11 or 9. I don't remember how old I was. I was over at my cousin's house. We were playing in the basement somehow or other. It was probably pre-Christmas. Somehow or other, the subject of what Santa was going to bring, or Santa Claus this, that, or the other one, and I said, you believe in Santa Claus? Because, of course, I was a I was a smart kid. I knew better. But apparently in that household, the myth was to be maintained for as long and as strongly as possible. And I didn't really realize, I think one of them started crying. And my uncle came in and found out what the ruckus was about, and he looked at me and very harshly said, "Yes, she believes in Santa Claus." I think I was more upset at the fact that my uncle was pissed at me than the kid was over there not being a Santa Claus or not, but it didn't come home to me just how badly I had upset her or them, my cousins, until I think a year later, maybe 2 years later, they came over to visit us, and I had a Star Trek poster up in my room, and my cousin took one look at it and looked at me and said, "You believe in Star Trek?" Must have been some really bad feeling there for a good long time. I'm sorry about that. And at the time, no, I would have to say to them, "Believe in?" No, I don't believe in Star Trek. I enjoy it as a television program, as a fine work of fiction. This, of course, would be the original series, which, in retrospect and looking at it now, there was at least enough of it there in comparison to what was being shown at the time to make it fine fiction. And even that one, even that classic Star Trek, found room to explore an alternate reality. It did it in a very cowboys and Indians gun-toting style, with good guy, bad guy, sell the soap suds aesthetics. That being the episode Mirror, Mirror, but at least it touched upon it. I don't know how many, there must be hundreds of examples in fiction. There must be hundreds of examples that go into the idea of alternate realities and parallel universes. I think they're found most often in science fiction, but they exist elsewhere. I think the oldest classic example I can think of would be something like A Christmas Carol, where Scrooge is shown one of his possible futures. I can't think of any others at the moment. But at present... Boy, that's going to be annoying in the final recording. Oh, it came right back on again. I guess I offended it. There's another aspect of this that struck me. Actually, this is post-recording. But I wanted to make mention of it and include it because I think in some aspect it must tie in somehow, somewhere. The idea of myth as truth, put forth in a variety of conversations through the round table at the House of the Harping Monkey, and of course in literature, along with the idea of the Jungian, the Carl Jung collective unconscious, along with the idea of the archetype, the human transcontinental, trans-international, trans-time, trans-cultural character type. The archetype, for example, death with the cowl and the scythe, essentially in almost all cultures represented as a skeleton, or the hero being the human being on a journey, a very capable and strong human being on a journey, with armed usually with nothing but their wits or a sword, the archetype of the fool or the mother, or the child. Could these be representations of beings or characters, or the archetype of the genie from the lamp, the archetype of the all-powerful being that can grant wishes? Could these be human manifestations, at least in the imagination, of entities that transcend multiple realities, that cut across the boundary between realities, the boundary between these actual existing universes, that boundary being the concrete physical laws, mathematics, and perceptions that we're forced to live and die within? Could the collective unconscious be something that is actually able to tap into a parallel universe or multitude of parallel universes, or the multiverse, as I've heard it referred to sometimes in literature? Pratchett uses the term multiverse, as I'm sure quite a few others. Could the collective unconscious be something that actually exists, if the human race has what you could call a collective unconscious? There's another link I'm going to put in. I'm going to put in the schnotes. If I can find the site, I believe it's still up. A site that generates truly random numbers. And what put me in mind of that was an experiment that set random numbers generators in a web around the world, widely spread random numbers generators that form a kind of a wave pattern with spikes that occur in the wave pattern when a large percentage of them coincide, when they start generating, if not the same, then very similar numbers all at the same time. I don't know what the premise of the experiment is. I don't know what the hypothesis is that's trying to be proved, disproved, or examined. But the results are these random numbers generators produce a series of numbers over time and are monitored. And when a good portion of them, a large portion of them, produce numbers that are within a very close range, then a spike occurs in the continuous line being drawn to monitor them. And it may be interesting to note that 3 hours, something like 3 hours before the events of 9/11, there was a significant spike in the numbers being generated by these scattered pods of number generators, an extremely significant spike. What does it mean? I don't know. Is it proof of a human collective precognitive subconscious? I don't know. I guess I'm pretty much being in keeping with the basis of the show here. Questions that can't be answered. I'll try and find information about that too, and put that in the show notes. At present, there are no tools to observe. There are no tools to observe alternate realities and alternate universes that we know of. But then again, 100 years ago, I don't think there was a way to. I don't think there was a way to successfully determine positive and negative particles. I think we were a decade or two away from the cloud chamber, or the use of the cloud chamber to detect radiation, or the results of particle collisions. 100 years ago. So the subatomic reality, the subatomic physics that we accept as scientific fact now was an imperceivable thing just 100 years ago. I suppose now we have to content ourselves with novelists, artists, television, and Hollywood to show us what the alternate realities are. Impossible? Why? What's impossible? According to who? Behavioral scientists are still struggling with the whole idea behind dreams and sleep. There's aspects of the brain that we haven't got a clue about. So whenever the experts tell you that something is absolutely impossible, take heart. It's a good sign. One of the things that that's arguably a possible bridge to alternate realities, and I'm not entirely sure about this, I wouldn't bet money on it, and I won't say that this is absolutely true, but I just find it extremely interesting. And that's some of the experimentation that was done with dimethyltryptamine, DMT, which is a controlled substance. It's not legal to possess or sell it outside of the context of clinical scientific research, and even that, I think, was put to a halt. But the reactions of people that have taken this psychoactive substance, which, by the way, is also generated by the body itself. Everyone actually has it produced naturally within the body. DMT, dimethyltryptamine, a psychoactive, what's referred to as a hallucinogen, but the people that have taken this apparently have very consistent reports, very consistent narratives of what it was they experienced when they took it. Most being that they had perceived something beyond the ability to describe verbally or visually, but that it was an alternate reality with intelligences in it attempting to communicate. Another thing I read recently was that while an experimenter, a clinical scientist experimenting on subjects taking the dimethyltryptamine, was unable to establish contact with the subject, waving hand in front of the face, screaming into their ear, staring at them, shaking them, whatever, could not establish any kind of communication with the subject. Several subjects in the same room that had all taken the DMT could communicate with each other. Anyone that's got further information about that specific study, I'd really be interested to find out. I'll put a link to that. I'll put a link to that too. I'm making more and more extensive use of Wikipedia lately. It's as if I've turned this into the Wikipedia hour, but I didn't want to do that. I'm gonna take a short break, and I'll be back in a bit. One last little observation that I'll throw in here is I find it as unexplainable to me anyway as a paranormal phenomenon. I find it as unexplainable that while we're completely cut off from these alternate realities, because the tools we have to observe the universe are finite to this universe, while we're completely cut off from all those existences, and all we have is what we can perceive as being right in front of us, and all we have are tools that we can make with our surrounding environment that can only be used to observe our surrounding environment based on the limitations of the tools themselves, we're still able to conceptualize and imagine the possibility of the other realities existing. What's the easiest way of saying all that long-winded crap I just spewed out? The easiest way of saying it is, I don't understand why we can make stuff up. Yeah, that was a more economical way of putting it. And I read a headline just recently that the astrological scientific community, sorry, the astronomical scientific community, has discovered that there may be a flaw or an inconsistency in the Hubble constant. What does that mean? I haven't got a clue. The bottom line of the article was that they could be as much as 15% wrong in their calculation of the age of the universe. I think at present the universe is supposed to be 13 point something billion years old, and it may actually be 15 point something billion years old. Anybody with more specifics and further facts on that cares to write in, please do so. What's the address? Why, it's anim5@anim5.com. I think I'll put this particular episode to rest. It may not be a long one, but it doesn't have to be. There's certainly enough to think about, or I've certainly found enough to think about, to be kicking myself for the rest of the week over what I left out. And for all that stuff that I left out, I'd love to fill it in with what you have to say. So I refer back to the advice that Derek gave you in the letter at the beginning of the show. Please, send an audio. Write an email. Let me know what you think. Here's a short bit of music, and on the opposite side, I'll be saying my goodbyes. Please enjoy this. We have genuine alternate realities, an infinite number of them, in genuine, actual, physical, existing universes, God knows where. In some books, it's just a little twist of reality that'll get you there. In some stories, it's a genie that grants you your wish. There's a possible way of looking at it. If you rub the lamp and a genie comes out and it gives you three wishes, is he really granting you three wishes by changing the reality you're in? Or is he just taking you into the reality where it actually exists?
taking you into the reality where you are a millionaire, or you have a great big beautiful mansion, or you are the king of the world, whatever. Whatever dumb fairy tale wish happens to be in the story. Is that what's happening, or is he changing the actual reality of the place you're in? That's kind of a pointless question, but which is more energy efficient? Which displays a better economy of conservation of energy? And if our imaginations and the results of our imagination, be they novels, short stories, paintings, sculptures, television shows, or films, or stage plays, if we have that big a variation on what we produce there, can you imagine how many channels God gets if there is a supreme, almighty creator of all existences? Can you imagine how many channels she gets to watch? Oh, well. I'm going to thank you very much indeed. I was a little under the weather for this particular podcast. I'm sorry about that. But I did want to get it done, get it in the can, as it were. And I may be sorry for all the stuff that I left out of it, but I urge you to check out the schnotes for this show, because the reading and particularly that animation, that flash animation, are really fascinating. Try out that Mobius strip thing if you didn't do it while listening. It's a fun little shocker. Like I said, I'm easily impressed and easily amused, so maybe it's just me. I don't know what the subject of the next podcast is going to be, number 20. I will, though, of course, in number 20, explain why the podcast is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. But in the meantime, I thank you once again for listening. I hope everything goes very well for you, and best of days.